Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and this afternoon we're going to share an adventure that is a life of a woman by the name of Leslie J. Fenner. We're going to be talking about her new book, Glimpses of the Light. Leslie, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, I know that you were born in the U.S., but you now reside in Vancouver, B.C. You've been involved in international business for over 20 years. You've worked with people in business from all levels, whether it's a Fortune 500 level or small businesses just developing. You've also worked throughout U.S. and North America and Europe. But you have had another very distinctive passion, and that is what you call the disciplines of mindful awareness and meditation. We're going to talk about that a little bit. Because this is part of the adventure of your life. You currently are on the board of Lotus Outreach Society in Canada. It's an international organization dedicated to improving the living conditions of children and their communities through education and health care. You are very much a believer in intuition. You speak all over. Leslie, your book is so intriguing because Glimpses of the Light is so real in the way you portray everything. And you have a quote that is right at the beginning of your book that I just loved. And it reads, "Let there be moments unexplainable. Let there be a few things that are mysterious for which you cannot supply any reason. Let there be a few things for which people will think you're a little crazy." Osho is the originator of that. Well, your journey began when and people thought you were a little crazy, too. Tell us how your adventure started.
Well, I have always been an adventurous person and loved adventure in my life. But it really began, I never thought about going to Bhutan or ever considered it. But I took on a teacher about 12 years ago. And very casually, one night over dinner with a group of people, he suggested that I should go live in his monastery in eastern Bhutan and teach English to Buddhist monks. And I really thought he was joking. I was an executive flying around the world at the time, and I thought he must be joking. But he was serious. So it really began with just really a question or just an idea of this wonderful adventure to go live in this magical country called Bhutan. Have you ever heard of Bhutan?
I've heard of it. Could you let my listeners know where it is exactly? Because it is a community that you will hear about, but a lot of people are not familiar with where it is located. Tell us where it is, Leslie.
Well, if people know where now it's, you know, Tibet, it's now China, but where Tibet and Nepal is and India, it's nestled, this little country that's nestled right on the other side in the middle of, surrounded by those countries in the Himalaya Mountains.
Now,
people think of Mount Everest. It's near not near Mount Everest, but in the same region.
So here is this little tiny place. Now, your teacher said that everyone had to go to Bhutan eventually for purification. And he said you needed to go for 6 months. Now, you're an adventurous soul, but Bhutan in this little area of mountain, did you have any clue as to what you were going to get into?
I went on complete faith and trust in him. All I knew is that my plane was going to be met, and I really had no idea of what was going to be in store for me. And it's probably a good idea that I didn't, because if I'd known, I probably wouldn't have gone.
Don't we say that about so many things in life? If I had known in advance, I wouldn't have done it.
Yeah, that's the adventure of life, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, you made a comment that according to Buddhist tradition, It said if you have a strong reaction, positive or negative, when you meet someone for the first time, you have a karmic link. Have you found that to be true?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Haven't you, in your life, when you meet somebody, it's like you know them for apparent reason,
mm-hmm.
and then there's some people you're so repelled by for no apparent reason.
Yes.
You know, either way, it's a reaction. It's a strong reaction. And both are considered to be karmic links because Buddhists do not believe in good and bad, right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
They just see things as they are.
Now, you also talked in your book about becoming a warrior and that this was part of your teacher's education. He said, the key to becoming a warrior is learning to be genuine and present in every moment, not being afraid of who you are, ultimately the definition of bravery. And I thought, that is an entirely different definition of a warrior than most of us would expect. For you to go into this experience was defining you as a female warrior for all intents and purposes. It was helping you to define yourself, wasn't it?
In many ways, yes, defining myself and also letting go of so much of the way that we're so conditioned in our world to perceive the world as good and bad, right or wrong, based on assumptions, perceptions, and judgments. And it was more or less letting go of that and just coming to see the world as it is without trying to make it anything different than how it really is. And that's really, I think, the definition of bravery, is accepting everything in our life.
That is, in the minds of many, something of a coward's positioning. And I say that, let me say that, I'm not making fun of what you're saying, but I had that challenge thrown up to me many, many years ago because there was a statement I had made to someone. I said, just walk the middle of the road. You know, don't go into any extremes. You don't have to. And before I knew it, this person was exploding, saying, you've got to stand up for this. You've got to stand up for that. You've got to take a positioning. You've got to do this. You've got. And I looked at this, and I thought, my goodness. You know, people will say if you don't do, accepting things as they are isn't necessarily the way of accomplishment. Of course, as Americans, we're inclined, we're doers. We're people that say, if there's a problem, let's see how we can fix it. But when you're saying this, you're not saying do nothing. You're saying,
no.
And that's the difference.
No, I'm a very, very, very driven person.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, we see it as you have an aim, you have a goal. But sometimes with life, you know, it's easy to be disappointed if life doesn't give you what you want with your expectations.
Mm-hmm.
You still pursue what it is that you want, but you trust the outcome isn't always what you want it to be, but it's as it should be. I think that we create so much suffering with our expectations and our drive to get somewhere only to be disappointed because it didn't turn out the way we wanted it to turn out.
Oh, I think that's so true. I really do. I think that is so true. And it's hard sometimes. I say it's hard because you have to have mindful concentration and attention. You have to be aware and attentive to where you are right in the moment because the moment now is often what creates what we see as future because it's what you do, how you live, how you perceive things in this moment that really have the reality. So here you are. You have been given an opportunity, you didn't have to accept it, but you did, to go on this adventure. And in your book, you said you were letting go of everything you had spent your entire life working for. Here you were at the peak of your career, and you resigned. How many people would be brave enough to do that? Some would say, I'm going to take a leave of absence, but not you. You actually resigned from your positioning.
Well, I knew that. I think that we all intuitively, all of us, have an inner wisdom, every single person, and some of us tap into it more than others, but we all have it. And I guess it was my inner wisdom that was telling me that this was going to change and alter my world, and it wouldn't be the same. So I decided to, and I've always believed in an abundant universe, that there's always opportunities. There's always another opportunity around the corner. So I have found the best way to live my life is to let go and trust.
That is something that when you can learn to do that, that's a tremendous accomplishment. But there again, it doesn't mean you're not doing. It means a whole different positioning of insight and understanding that is empowering. It is not deflating. It doesn't mean that you go off into some little hovel somewhere in the middle of nowhere and retreat from life and responsibilities. That's not what it's talking about. It's entirely different. Now, I loved it when you were setting up for travel. You got a note. This I just dearly loved. This is what the note reads. Dear Leslie, hello. Please bring one sleeping bag, one pair of good boots, one warm coat. I will meet your airplane. You didn't listen, did you?
Well, you know, us North Americans are a little attached to our necessities in life, like nail polish and lipstick.
And rollers.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my goodness. I just got so tickled when I read that, because here's just this little note. Just bring this. This is all you're going to need. And you're thinking, wait a minute here. So you had six bags. You brought every convenience you possibly thought you would need, because you didn't know what you were getting into. And when you got there, what did you find? What happened when you first stepped off that plane?
Well, you know, landing in Bhutan is... I wish everybody could go, because I do believe the history, it's like the history of that country, it just permeates your soul, because many, many people have been enlightened in Bhutan. So there's this incredible energy there that you just feel uplifted the minute you step off the plane. It's like the history, the people, everything is kind of woven into this magical country. So when I first stepped off the plane, I was very intrigued by what I felt. But on the journey to get to where I was going, and then the monastery, it was desolate. I mean, I went to a place that was completely desolate. As you know, there were no showers or flush toilets or email or telephone or electricity. So that... you know, was a little bit of a shock.
It is a big shock.
It was a shock, but it was also, it forced me to let go of everything that wasn't important and discover what was real in life. So everything that wasn't important dropped away.
Well, those of you listening, I'm talking with Leslie J. Fenner. Her book, Glimpses of the Light, is all about her journey. She has been in the study of many philosophies. One of her teachers said, this is what I want you to do. She goes to Bhutan. She steps off. She's a Westerner. She's prepared. She's got her six bags of luggage. She's all ready to go. And I love this. When you were in the journey to get to where you were going, you stopped and had lunch with a family. Gale was a person that packed you a lunch of eggs, rice, and tea, and you were very appreciative of the family. And you asked this question, won't we be able to stop at inns or restaurants along the way for food? These people looked at you like you were from another planet, and they were so gracious. There aren't 7-Elevens in Bhutan.
No 7-Elevens, no convenience stores. I mean, gas stations, I think I saw two. And you have to, you know, not just pump your own gas, you have to literally pump your own gas with like this thing that only a man could do, because it takes so much energy to sort of, you know, it's going back 100 years in time in technology.
Yes, they have very little of it.
Yes.
Very, very little of it. Now, you give a little bit of history about Bhutan, and you say its geographical size is that of Switzerland, and the young king in 1971 had enough foresight to join the United Nations and was able to safeguard Bhutan's independence. Thereby, they were able to avoid the fate of invasion like Tibet and Sikkim went through. Now, here you are. you arrive at the shrine. You are taken inside to an area that you're on, but you were the only woman there.
Yes, I marvel at that sometimes because it's really unheard of for women to live in monasteries. And I was really the first woman to live in this monastery, I think it was a little shocking as much for the monks as it was for me, because I was a female. Mm-hmm. And even though they're monks, they're still men.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yes, it was. I think it was altering for the monks, and of course, obviously for myself, it was a significant change.
Now, you were doing teaching at the Institute. What was that like for you?
Well, I come from a background of being an executive in the high tech industry, running large sales teams. So I wanted them to learn in the same way that I wanted my salespeople to sell.
Uh-huh.
So I had an agenda that over time, I really thought, oh my goodness, I really want them to learn, but I had to let all my agendas go. So it was, every bit of the experience was growing and learning. And some of them did learn when I eased up a little bit on that.
Now, one of the factors in that area of the world is that you had to be diligent regarding sanitation because disease and unsanitary environments were very much there. And you had mosquitoes, which you could get malaria. So there were things you did have to pay attention to. I mean, this was a very unique area, but you still had to recognize, as you said, understand the realities of what was there. And they told you also to keep a padlock on your door.
Yeah. Well, I had a lot of luggage, as you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And they have very little there, and they don't have boundaries like we have in the West.
Mm-hmm.
They just walk into your room and they don't really have the same boundaries that we have. I mean, nobody would just walk into your house here, but there they people, the villagers, they just don't have the same sense of boundaries. So, and yes, I did have to be very diligent about my health as well. That's very true.
You had a big adjustment when you were there, when you were all ready to start teaching, and they said, no, not yet. Don't worry about it. We've got something else to do. There was no rush there. Their sense of time, as we have it here in the West, doesn't exist. It's a whole different type of a world.
That's very true. It's very true of the East, not just in Bhutan, but I find that in India and Nepal as well. People there are very happy because they don't rush. There's not this, you know, people are going at a breakneck speed in North America to get where, 5 minutes earlier or 10 minutes earlier. It's just so different there. I think it's a much more laid back and relaxed approach to people here. I mean, they swear at the car in front of them because they can't get somewhere fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally different.
Because
totally
of that,
different.
You had to go through an adjustment because you were accustomed to working 12 to 14-hour days. You were accustomed to this lifestyle that we experience here in the United States. You've got this, you've got that, you've got this deadline, you've got that deadline. And that's what you knew. It was quite an adjustment for you to go into the other patterning, wasn't it?
Oh, very difficult. I mean, when you've been I call myself a type A in recovery, type A personality in recovery, but when you've been a really busy person your whole life, to just go from full speed to stop, it takes time to adjust to that. It's not an easy adjustment because we're so used to doing. But there's such wisdom in not doing and such growth and understanding, and it just changes you in the not doing. I think it's more difficult than doing, actually.
You have a quote in here by Chogyam, and correct me if I'm mispronouncing his name, Trungpa, and it says, as a warrior, you're willing to take a chance. You are willing to expose yourself to a phenomenal world and trust that it will give you a message either of success or failure. messages that are regarded neither as punishments nor congratulations. You trust not in success, but in reality. That is a very powerful quote.
I love that, because it's so true, isn't it?
Oh, it is.
Because there's been many, as I'm sure there's been in your life, where you strive for something, but it doesn't always turn out the way that you want it. But you're willing to accept reality, that you continue to strive, but you believe in yourself so much. And life does give us messages. Absolutely. I always see that, is that if we all, I just see all doors as opening, and even though it doesn't always turn out the way I want it to, it's always an open door.
The children there loved you dearly. The monks loved you dearly. Yet they had, for all of what their training involved, they really had a fear of the unknown, and you were gutsy. You were this American female that said, I'm going to go out. Don't tell me I can't go out and do things and see things. Express to my audience what it was that they did in the way of responding to that. How did they work with this independent American female?
Well, they tried to control, but I don't think I was controllable. I think that they just found it impossible to their faces, their hands across their, arms. I knew when they were upset with my sense of independence and adventure, but I think they got used to it. I think it was a change for them, too, dealing with someone like myself.
Right, and I think you gave them a gift in turn that they were able to recognize, because you had to get a special permit to go to Bhutan, and it was because of your teacher that you got it. But you were only permitted to go in for a certain amount of time. They're very strict about letting outsiders in, aren't they?
Absolutely. And that's what makes the country so precious and so special, is normally people are only allowed in for 2 weeks at $250 a day. But I was very privileged to be there for such a long time. And I continue to go back. I'm doing a project now in Bhutan where I'm, because there wasn't fruits and vegetables when I'm there, I've started an agricultural project in the village for the monastery and the local villagers, and I've got the local school involved.
So oh, how fabulous.
Yeah, I have a greenhouse project going there. And so I was just back there this winter, and will continue to go back. So now that we can create sustainability for the village and the monastery and the local people to bring fruits and vegetables into their diet.
That's amazing. What an accomplishment. Now, I want you to touch on your interaction with a holy woman. I call her a holy woman. Her name was Khandro, who lived high in the Himalaya Mountains. How did you find out about this very, very talented lady? And where is Sikkim?
Sikkim is used to be its own kingdom, and now it's I'm terrible at pronunciation, the third highest mountain peak in the world. It's way up near Nepal in the Himalaya Mountains, Sikkim. And I had a dream about this woman. I never even knew who she was. And she's considered to be a national treasure in Sikkim, as truly one of the enlightened people on the earth. And they really treasure the female wisdom, enlightened women. And I had a dream where she came and asked me to see her, and I didn't know who she was, but I knew that I had to go and visit her. And so I was very fortunate to be able to be granted the permission to go and spend time with her up in the mountains.
What was that experience with her? What made it such a unique happening? And why did she reach out to you with the telepathic aspect through the dream?
That's a really good question. Well, I believe there's a rising, that the world is turning, and that there is a new level of awareness or consciousness coming, and I think it's called the divine feminine. that the world of balance and feminine energy, and this woman was is the essence of the divine female, the divine feminine energy of wisdom. And being with her was probably like sitting with a divine human being who had that wisdom and emanated this. I would say it was one of the most powerful experiences of my life, because when you're with someone like that, they have a radiance and a glow that just completely gives you the sense of the divine, of what everybody's vision of the divine would be, which would be pure love. That's what I experienced with her. And I believe that there's a new consciousness that's rising in all of us that's awakening. And I think that was just it was a glimpse of me of the possibility of that consciousness on the earth.
There is a wonderful statement in here by Dilgo. Your teacher said that in the beginning we need a master to help us in our struggle to know the truth. It is often said that without a master we cannot make a beginning. A good master leads you to your master within. Only your master within your own higher self can adequately answer all questions. It is said that once you unite all the elements within yourself, metaphorically the uniting of our male and female, the light that dispels darkness appears. When this happens, you will see a light in your meditation. This light brings knowledge. That is why it is called the true master. The real master is perfect light. I read that and I thought, that is wisdom of the highest order, because that is the truth. We have all of this within ourselves. Here you've had this journey. What was the greatest gift? Now, I know you've been back more than once, but what was the greatest gift that you brought back for yourself from this experience?
That's a really, really good question. I think my heart has opened and expanded in ways in that I didn't realize that it was possible to experience. And when your heart expands, then your world expands and everything in your life changes. So I would say that is probably the greatest gift, was to have that opening, and that opening creates just a total change in life, and everything changes and shifts then. An expansion of breaking, you know, people think when your heart breaks, mm-hmm. from sorrow, I see it as a heart opening and expansion. So I think it's just my heart expanded.
Do you have a website, Leslie?
I do.
And what is it, so my listeners, if they choose, they're web savvy, so that they can go and visit your site?
It's Leslie, L-E-S-L-I-E, J, Fenner, F-E-N-N-E-R.com.
LeslieJFenner.com. This is a woman that traveled to a part of the world probably most of us will never see. But you'll be able to travel with her. You'll be able to feel her experiences and listen and learn about levels of wisdom that maybe you're ready for. Glimpses of the Light, Leslie J. Fenner has been my guest. Her website is LeslieJFenner.com. That's L-E-S-L-I-E-J. Fenner, F-E-N-N-E-R.com. Leslie, thank you so much for being my guest today. It's been a delight.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
And congratulations on your accomplishments. It's so delightful that you're following your heart center. That's really terrific. Have a fabulous life, Leslie.
Thank you.
This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. When we come back, well, we'll have a lot more good things to share with you. Glimpses of the Light, Leslie J. Fenner, a true story of courage, insight, and mystical adventure to a small country most of us, well, we're not even aware that it exists, Bhutan. Enjoy the adventure. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't you go away.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Welcome, welcome, welcome. And if you'd like to call in, I would be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here are the toll-free numbers you can call in to if you're in the U.S., 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Also, Canadians, it's 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And we have another direct line of 530-876-3222. If you are a new listener to the program, we are delighted to have you as part of our listening family. And just know, if you want to call in and chat with me, all I need is your first name or your initial, and then after that, you're welcome to ask me anything that you like. So again, U.S. 877-876-5227, Canadians 888-815-9756, or 530-876-3222. My first batch of my newsletter went out yesterday, and the second batch will be going out today. It probably will be up online by tomorrow, and you'll be able to see my schedule, my itinerary. I am going to be in San Francisco in just actually less than 2 weeks. I'm going to be appearing at the Wisdom Festival, which is going to be on Saturday the 15th as well as Sunday the 16th. On the 15th, I'll be doing a speaking presentation at 7 in the evening, and it's on mental ecology. So if you'd like more information about this wonderful event and would like to come by, see me. I'll also have a booth. 113 is my booth there at the Wisdom Festival. Just come on by, and then we'll be glad to schedule an appointment if you wanted a mini session. I also will have books and materials there for distribution as well as sales. So that's the Wisdom Festival in San Francisco. Go online to thewisdomfestival.com, and you'll see the hours. You'll find out about the tickets, the costs, and everything else. And I'll look forward to seeing you there. Also, I wanted to let you know that for those of you in Washington, I'm going to be appearing at the Boeing Parapsychology Expo, and that's going to be in Kent, and I'll be giving you more information about that as we get closer. That is going to be on the 29th of September. Also in my newsletter, I have my itinerary for October, which is going to take me to Southern California as well as Alaska and New York City. So we've got a pretty busy traveling schedule, and occasionally you'll be hearing the best of Donna on the days that I'm either flying or driving to particular locations, but just know we will give you plenty of advance notice, and you'll find all of the scheduling listed. Again, give me a call if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. Those are our toll-free numbers. All I need from you is your first name or your initial, and after that, I'll give you my mental impressions. Jerry Buckheimer made a statement, "You're never actually on the bottom, since every little job you do has the power to take you to the top." You're never actually on the bottom, since every little job you do has the power to take you to the top. He is a TV and movie producer. He started out working carrying mail to various executives. I think so often, especially when people have gone to college, they've made a big investment in their education, and they come out and they think, by yimini, I'm going to step right into a job. Well, it usually doesn't work that way. You might get lucky, but more often than not, people find that maybe they've gotten a phenomenal education, but they have no practical application that they can take in the way of job experience to someone and say, well, I've done this, I've done that, I've done the other. You're going to have to get it somewhere. So whatever it is that you need to do, for heaven's sakes, don't ever think any job is menial. You may put that term to it, but every single job is important. And I mean that sincerely. Whenever we do not appreciate some of those jobs that we might give a term of menial, when we don't appreciate that, then how are we going to be able to really do a good job in whatever we do? You need to understand what other people go through, why you want to be able to grow up and out of a situation, but also to appreciate that some people, that's what they're going to be doing. They don't have an aspiration of being a super executive or owning a Fortune 500 company. We need the farmers. We need the clerks. We need everybody that we see. We need the garbage collectors. We need all kinds of people doing all kinds of jobs. So I agree with Jerry Buckheimer. You're never actually on the bottom, since every little job you do has the power to take you to the top. And one thing I'll just pass along, too, is remember always, don't burn your bridges. This is something that too often people do. When they leave a job or a position, they really are mouthy, they get very nasty, they'll say, well, this is it, and then lo and behold, they may find that their paths cross with that person, or maybe they're going to want to have a referral, and they've left such a bad taste, so to speak, in the mind and environment of where they were previously, nobody's going to want to recommend them for anything. And contrary to popular belief, where people say, oh, nobody can say anything against you when you leave a job, they don't have to say too much. The person on the other end of the phone will say, are you going to say anything? And they'll go, and they'll say, well, guess what? I have some questions. Just answer yes or no. Okay. And that's what they do. They don't volunteer information. But the savvy person that's trying to find out about someone and their working history, et cetera, knows how to ask questions so the person on the other end of the line does not feel like they're violating any laws. So believe me, you want to be sure that whatever you do, wherever you are, respect and appreciate that positioning. Treat everybody in your environment with dignity. They deserve that. And just remember, you don't have to stay where you don't want to be, but you don't want a negative dark cloud to follow you either, wherever you might go. So your reputation will precede you many times, believe it or not. I wanted to share a story by Cherie Durbin. This is her personal experience. I love stories like this. And it's more than just a coincidence. And she was working as a waitress in this particular diner. And she said it was raining like crazy, and the sky just kept getting darker and darker and darker. So she had told her boss she was going to stay and work late, but she said, boy, this storm is not fun. I don't know that I made the right choice by deciding to stay, but I kept my word. I closed down my station. I was worrying about getting home because it was dark out, and it's very dangerous. This storm was very, very violent. Well, her boss called out to her, be safe, as she left. And, of course, it was a run to get to the car. She said it was raining so hard that her windshield wipers barely kept up with the downpour. Yet, traffic was still going pretty fast. And she said, I was very cautious. I did not have confidence in the roads or in speeding. I wasn't going to try to drive the way I normally did, so I stayed in the safe lane. And she said, once in a while, I'd feel the wheels of the car hydroplaning on the wet pavement. And she said, oh, boy, my heart was in my throat. I thought, with this happening, I'm wondering what I should do because I couldn't stop in time if my life depended on it. The rain's coming down with such a fury. Even though I'm driving very cautiously, this is a very dangerous situation. Well, just as these thoughts were running through her mind, there was a dark shape that caught her eye. something very, very big and brown darted into her lane from the woods. All she could see was fur and antlers. She hit the brakes. She said it was too late. She, with just a sickening thud, her car slammed right into the deer. Well, she was just sick, absolutely sick. What have I done, she wondered. Well, she managed to pull over to the shoulder of the freeway, and she stopped. She was trying to collect her whip. She was shaking, and then she saw the rest of the herd. There was a dozen of the deer, maybe more, maybe less, that were grazing along the side of the road, and she felt absolutely awful. She thought, I've killed the buck, the leader of this group. Well, she happened to look up into a rear-view mirror, and she sees blinking emergency lights. And it was just a short time later that a couple of police cars whizzed by her, and another police officer spotted her on the shoulder, and he pulled up behind me, and she rolled down her window, and he wanted to know if everything was okay with her, and she said, I'm okay, but I feel so badly I hit a deer. And he said, what deer? She said, well, right over there. And she looked back towards the road, and there was no sign of this deer, this buck, anywhere. So she told the officer everything that had happened. He went around to the front of her car and bent down to look at the grill. Now, this was a pretty big buck, she said she had hit. He said, I don't understand why there's no damage. He said, but lady, if you hit something, you didn't injure it, because when you hit a buck of that size, it usually is going to dent the fender. The weight of the animal is going to affect the front of your car, but there's no damage to the front of your car at all. And she said, gee, you know, I don't understand, but I want to thank you for stopping and being willing to assist me, because it was still pouring like crazy. And he said, well, ma'am, I've got to tell you something. Whatever stopped you, you need to be very grateful, because there is a 10-car pileup just up ahead. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I love those kinds of stories. But having had a few experiences of my own, I can understand exactly how she felt. Very, very grateful. Something stopped her, preventing her from being involved in that horrible, horrible pileup. This is Donna Sebo. And before we go to break, I do want to tell you about my guests that are going to be coming up. Tomorrow we're going to be talking with Cliff Fazzolari. This is a gentleman that has written a book that definitely touches the heart and the mind in a very special way. In today's world, so frequently, the medical profession is really taking a beating. However, Cliff does something differently. He shows the heart and the soul of a staff and a group of people that saved his son's life, his 4-year-old boy. So we're going to be talking about his wonderful book, The House of Miracles. And then on Thursday, we're going to be talking with Dennis Adams. We're going to be talking about honesty, how to be direct and respectful. This is a small book, but it's a powerful book, and it's one that I think is often needed. I have to tell you, when I was on the business trip to the out-of-state program, I encountered personally a group of young people who really could have used this book big time. And it was a very special experience, because I spoke up to this group of young people. And, of course, some of the retorts from some of them, they were young men in their late teens, and they were very disrespectful. But you know what happened that was so very, very unique? Was one of those young men that was seated in this group of young people, he came back to our table. This occurred in a restaurant. Came back to our table, came to me, and said, I want to apologize for all of my friends. He said, they're very excited, and he said, I realize they were very rude, but I want you to know, I really am sorry for this. It shouldn't have happened. They shouldn't have acted that way. And I looked into this young man's eyes, and I realized this was quite, quite a special individual, and it took a lot of courage for him to come back and to say, I'm sorry. And I shook his hand, and I complimented him, and I know that that's a young man that's going to achieve some very special things in life and will touch the lives of many people, because he's thoughtful, he's caring, and he is respectful, and he does want to make a difference. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't you go away. More good things to share. We'll be back right after this.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right, Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227. All I need is your first name or initial, and then just give me a buzz. And then, like I said, first name or initial, and I love to know where you're calling from. And then I'll give you some insight. And also for Canadians, 888-815-9756. And you are also welcome to ask a question about anything that you like. And 530-876-3222. Well, you're a person that is adventurous. You like water sports. Well, in Galveston, Texas, there are surfers. Yes, they even have them in Texas, where they use a motorboat to chase down super tankers in the local shipping channel. To me, this is a real gutsy activity. What they do is they ride the huge vessel's wake waves, which can reach 5 feet and carry a surfer 2 miles or more. Well, that's one way to keep cool. But the size of those tankers, I'm telling you, I don't know that I'd be so brave, but they just absolutely enjoy it, and those waves are phenomenal. So if you want to keep cool, you might want to visit Galveston, Texas. That is an area that has all kinds of fabulous activities here. Also, I wanted to share with you a kid's story by David Lanes. He said a horse can, he was talking about a particular horse that could win any race. And it was being told to a jockey by the owner of this horse. And he said, it'll win as long as you shout alley-oop when you approach each jump. Well, the jockey didn't know that this was true. It sounded a little far-fetched, so he was ignoring the advice, and the rider starts in the race, and then the horse crashes right through the first two hurdles. On the third jump, the jockey whispers, and embarrassed by this, alley-oop into the horse's ears. Well, the horse doesn't jump. Afraid of losing, the jockey finally yells out, alley-oop, just before the fourth hurdle, and the horse sails right over it. The jockey is so relieved, he keeps yelling, and the horse ends up winning the race. The trainer wanted to know what had gone on. He said, what happened? You had me scared for a few minutes there. The jockey said, it must be the horse. He has to be deaf. He's not deaf, the trainer says. Blind, yes, but not deaf. Anyway, cute story. I wanted to share that with you. Hey, are you feeling sort of down in the dumps? You can't really focus. You just feel like your energy is waning. Well, you might have a sleep disorder, something like sleep apnea. Now, Ashley Keenan is a teenager. She had depression or the symptoms of it. She had problems with school. They labeled her with ADD. However, after some research was done, they found that there was something else at the base of all her problems. Now, her mom, Sandra, was really very concerned about the whole scenario because Ashley would go to bed before it even got dark. And she said, this was just unbelievable. Her teenage daughter, who should be very, very vibrant and happy and enthusiastic, it wasn't that way at all. Ashley had tremendous fatigue, grades were terrible, and they just didn't know what to do. So they took her to a psychiatrist. The psychiatrist said, yes, she's depressed. She probably has ADD. But it was just not working. There have been labels, wasn't working. Well, in talking with Ashley's doctor, there was a study he happened to find that said sleep apnea mimicked depression. Sleep apnea mimicked depression. Now, what happens if you have sleep apnea? And we have a member of our family that has sleep apnea, so I know exactly what this is. Sleep apnea patients will stop breathing multiple times a night. Their snoring is actually gasping for air, so they don't get very much rest, which makes them so tired and moody, they obviously are going to be depressed. They have sleep deprivation. And Sandra, when she heard about this study, said, my goodness, my daughter snores. This makes sense. So what they did, they took Ashley to a lab where they used electrodes monitoring her brain waves and her breathing. And what they found out was that she was waking every 8 seconds. So it was no wonder she was so exhausted. But there is a continuous positive air pressure mask that can be worn at night that can keep her airway open. It's called a CPAP. Now, she did a trial run with this CPAP, and she was amazed because at 7 a.m. in the morning, Ashley was wide awake, smiling, and chatting because she had slept soundly for the first time in years. So now she wears her CPAP cap every night. She's in college. She has a 3.6 grade point average, and she is just doing fabulously. And she said, now I'm living a normal life. Now, if you have someone that's in your environment that have any of the following symptoms that I'm going to share with you, they may have sleep apnea and they should be tested for it. Loud snoring. Now, not everybody who snores is going to have sleep apnea, but almost everyone with sleep apnea snores. If they wake frequently during the night, if they're gasping or making choking sounds during their sleep, if they have a sore throat when they wake up, and the reason they get the sore throat is because they're gasping for air. They may come up with headaches in the morning, tossing and turning during their sleep. They feel tired and irritable like Ashley, and it's very difficult for them to stay awake during the day. They just are constantly wanting to doze. They're very sleepy. And there's other signs that you might not be getting enough sleep, too, and that is unexpected weight gain, unexplainable. You're having a tough time focusing, you're very restless, you catch colds easily. Usually because you're not rested, you're not feeling very optimistic, you forget things, and also low libido. All of these things can be attributed to a lack of rest. And sleep apnea is not a joke. I have known a number of people whose health was seriously compromised because they had it. So if this is something that you feel that any member of your family may possibly need to be checked for, go to one of these sleeping labs. Go ahead and have it checked out. Because when you know, then you can do something about it. If you don't know something, you can't do anything. So ignorance is not bliss. This is Donna Sebo, and give me a buzz if you want to chat, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Or 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Don't forget, tomorrow we're going to have Cliff Fazzolari. If you've ever had a sick child, if you've ever been in a life-threatening situation, and your life has been saved by medical professionals who really care, this is going to be a book that will be very meaningful to you. It'll also make you realize if you feel sort of down on the medical establishment, don't. Because a lot of the people that go into medicine sincerely want to make a difference and want to make you as healthy as they possibly can. So this is a wonderful book, Glimpse the House of Miracle, and Cliff Fazzolari is going to be my guest. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is a day to be enjoyed, savored, and sipped with pleasure. Use your mind for the right things. Don't waste it on the wrong. It's not worth it. Talk with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.
Hi, this is futurist Gordon Michael Scallion, and you're listening to BBS
Radio.
.com.